Welcome to Breakfast with Tiffany Show. My name is Tiffany Rosdell, and I am a Tokyo-based transformational lifestyle coach. In each episode of this podcast, I want to explore the positive transitions other people have made to how they freed themselves from their struggles, what pushed them to overcome their difficulties, and how and why they felt like they could overcome. Breakfast with Tiffany Show is really all about the transitions everyone who wants to succeed makes and what they did to get there. As such, while the focus is on LGBTQ+ journeys, I want to share the stories of all people who have found their way to success. My hope is to have this platform for all of us to be together while listening to successful stories, amazing life experiences, inspirational journeys, as well as having good laughs and lots of smiles.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce you to something quite extraordinary? It's the Breakfast with Tiffany Show podcast. And now, it is with great pleasure that I introduce you to your host, Tiffany Rosdell.
Hello, beautiful people. This is Tiffany Rosdell, and I'm your host for Breakfast with Tiffany Show podcast. I love starting my show by saying how I'm grateful for you for tuning in today for another episode. This is a continuation of our compilations of the best conversations we've had with our amazing guests last year. We had plenty of guests last year that it couldn't even fit in one episode. How incredible is that? I'm so grateful for all the wisdoms that all our guests last year. Re-listening to all these episodes really gave me so much of realizations, also new learnings. Every time I re-listen to the episode, there's something that I learn always. But this time we select the best conversations out of those conversations on the podcast. This is the part 3. This is not the last one, as next week we have more. But before that, there's an announcement I just wanted to announce. Finally, we're doing again the Zenscape Wellness Retreat, which the retreat that I always host. And we finally confirmed the dates. It's going to be on April 7, 8, and 9. It's during that weekend. 7, 8, 9. So if you are living in Japan or even not living in Japan and interested to join, plan ahead your time, because this time, the wellness retreat that we're doing is going to be in Hiroshima. I know I've been talking about how amazing this temple that I've been staying in Hiroshima, that I've stayed for 2 consecutive years during New Year's Eve, because I always felt that I was healed and I was able to immerse myself into healing. And every time I just go, there's always a new discovery of myself, not just myself, and also the people that host me during that retreat. Finally, I was able to discuss with them about it, and we are able to plan it. And I am going to send all the details within the month of February. But if you are already excited and interested to join, message me and let me know. Then I can send you the informations of that retreat. Once we finish all the informations for that retreat, we will post it also, and we will announce it again here on the podcast. I will announce it every week to remind you. This is not a retreat that I will always host or I will always do. There's always a different team, and this time we're going to focus on staying in a temple, having a digital detox, and immersing yourself into culture, Japanese culture, and learning and connecting with like-minded people. So this opportunity is once in a lifetime. So definitely join. And if it's really calling you and you've been wanting to experience to go to a wellness retreat, this is your opportunity. that's all I have for now, and I will update you with the details about the Zenscape Wellness Retreat in April. Here's a continuation of our compilations of the best conversations on the podcast in 2022. And first up is episode number 104, How to Have Perseverance and Power, with unicycling world champion and activist Chris Hruwai. Last year, I was very lucky to be connected with the amazing activist Chris Hruwai. I was watching this film documentary last year called Milk, and was really touched and inspired by Chris' stories. I actually used to buy butter, and also sometimes I would buy like meat. I rarely eat meat nowadays, but before, when I used to buy lamb meats, whenever I buy them, I buy the ones that's coming from New Zealand, which I thought New Zealand can be really a great products when it comes to dairy and also the meats. But after watching that documentary, it really opened my eyes, and also the opportunity to be able to talk to Chris on the podcast, I literally stopped buying them. And ever since, even the dairy products, I don't buy them at all. There are plenty of information that I think we consumers doesn't know, and where our foods are coming from. So in this podcast, we talk all about these issues about inhumane activities in the farm industry. You mentioned there are a lot of points that we want to discuss today on the podcast, and I can't wait to talk about it. But before we go on and deep dive about these topics, I would love to know more about you being a world champion as a unicyclist. It's such an amazing achievement that you have, and I wonder what other opportunities you receive after having all that experience.
So I've been unicycling since I was about 13 years old, and I credit this hobby as something that really kept me out of trouble when I was younger, because I grew up in a low socioeconomic area, a lot of unemployment, a lot of gang activity, a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol, and family abuse and things like that. And so I can't understate how important it is for our people to find hobbies that can keep them busy. So I was very lucky and privileged to be able to take my hobby around the world, competed in various countries, had a lot of really great experiences from it. Probably the main thing is that, I've learned a lot about perseverance and willpower. And if you set your mind to something and believe in yourself, really anything is possible. Luckily for me, having that experience as a young man, I've taken those learnings and I'm now trying my hardest to apply it to my activism and to apply it to trying to create a better world, or at least, doing my part to create a better world and believing in myself and my ability to do that. And that such a thing is even possible. Because 3-time world champion, it's something I never thought of being possible when I was younger, when I started unicycling. But the more I believed in myself, the more I pushed, the easier things became. And I really have to thank the sport of unicycling, because it actually put me in my job with Te Hauora o Ngāpuhi, which got me along the line of working on issues such as inequality and poverty and issues that you find in low socioeconomic areas. I started teaching unicycling in schools, and from there it branched out into mentoring programs with kids, talking to kids about nutrition and other various ways to add positivity into their lives. And just how to have fun as well, which is really amazing, really awesome job. Lots of really awesome learning examples. Yeah, and I try to apply it every day.
It sounds like really a lot of fun, like having your passion about being a unicyclist, and also at the same time, you're doing this, being an advocate for environment and being an activist. So I want to ask you about what is the most common misconception about activism that you would like to address?
Maybe that it has to be like angry, shouty, holding a sign on the side of the road. Activism comes in all shapes and sizes. All of our decisions that we make on a daily basis have some type of political aspect to them. And so usually just existing in a certain way can be a form of activism. A lot of people, they say, oh, I'm not an activist, I'm not like them. But essentially, if you're advocating for something, especially if you're pushing against social norms and whatnot, then maybe you don't identify as an activist, but you're participating in actions that are influencing others to change, which I would call activism. But, you know, I'm not necessarily into labeling everything. If you don't want to call it that, that's totally fine. You know, there's kind of a difference between activism and advocacy. But for me, if you're doing something that has some kind of political angle to it and you're trying to maybe just motivate others or inspire others or influence others, then I would say that it's a form of activism.
Thank you for sharing that. And I wonder, you being an activist, how do you take care of yourself in terms of, you know, the activism fatigue?
Yeah, activism fatigue is a real thing. You know, I go up and down all the time. I have some days where, you know, especially I try to keep up to date with everything that's happening. And so that can be very overwhelming. And when you're faced with the enormity of the situation, it's easy to be disempowered. But I would just tell people, you know, hold on to the things that keep you happy. Like, I've got my hobbies like unicycling. I've got my partner. Because I post a lot of content on social media, I'm often getting a lot of encouragement from people. So, you know, obviously, if you're being an activist, or if you're just being someone who's different to everybody else, you really do need to surround yourself with people who understand you, because you need to be able to lean on other people. Without that social support, you're just going to feel isolated, ostracized, and it's not going to be sustainable. So, yeah, look after yourself. Have those morning rituals that you're talking about. Have those hobbies that you love, and actually carve out some time for that self-care. I think a lot of us like to think, I don't need self-care, I'm okay. And they just try and like slog through. I mean, some people can do that, but I find it's unsustainable. So I would just tell people, make sure you prioritize your own self-care, because if you're not looking after yourself, how can you look after anybody else?
Oh, absolutely. I love that. That's amazing. And isn't that important that you have that encouragement from people, and also surrounding yourself with, you know, like-minded people? I think that's so important too. And I'm really happy to hear that you are really taking care of yourself. We made a 2 series on the episode when we had Chris Hurwai on the podcast, because we had so much great conversations on that episode. So definitely check out episode 104 and 105, which we will link the details on our podcast show notes. Moving on to episode number 106, Bringing Out Your Inner Goddess with Miss Universe 2005, Natalie Glebova. It is the 2nd year anniversary special we had on our podcast last year. The amazing Natalie Glebova, who is a Miss Universe winner and now a winning coach to many women who compete for the beauty pageants. As some of you know, in the Philippines, we are a massive supporter of the pageants. And I grew up in watching all these beauty pageants and supporting the representatives we have every year. Interviewing Natalie is such an amazing opportunity for me to really understand and learn more about a Miss Universe beauty winner mindset. Natalie gave so much wisdom on this conversation. So listen. As we all know, most women joining prestigious pageants like Miss Universe, obviously, they are fully equipped and prepared for the contest. And being selected in their own country takes a lot of preparation. So since you've been coaching so many amazing women around the world, and most of them are international pageant contestants, I'm interested to know, what is the most common weakness you see in these women before training them?
Most of the time, the weakness, and I wouldn't say that it's a weakness, it's a lack of awareness of their mental and emotional state at any given point, and lack of awareness of who they are on that soul level, on their inner essence. And of course, I understand this is just one belief and one idea that comes from the Eastern philosophies, that we all have a soul and Some people might not believe it. But regardless, I think that some kind of spirituality will go a long way for any woman who's competing, because when she understands to separate herself from her thoughts, from her emotions, and understand that the real entity that is who she is the one that is observing all of that, it's so much easier to not get psyched out. It's so much easier to stop comparing yourself. It's easier to perform as your most authentic, most glowing, beautiful self that no one can take their eyes off you. When you're being yourself and you're being real and authentic, that's when you get that glow. That's when the people and the judges and everyone else is looking at you and they see the real you, versus somebody who's trying to put on a show or trying to pretend or trying to impress somebody by not being themselves. And so I think that spiritual aspect, which I bring into all of my coaching, whether it's for pageants, in the Win the Crown programs, whether it's for self-love, which is a Win and Love masterclass that I have, or Win the Year masterclass when it comes to setting your goals and slaying your goals and living your life as a winner, that spiritual aspect needs to be there because it helps you to stay and live in the present moment. So I take a lot of my concepts and teachings from Eckhart Tolle, Power of Now book, and a lot from the Buddhism and Vedic philosophies of ancient India, because it resonates with me. And I feel like it has helped me not only achieve everything that I want, but it helps me to live life happier and healthier and with less mental stress, with much more mental wellness. Because in this world, especially where we are so connected through social media and we see only the best of the best that people post, it's very easy to get discouraged. It's very easy to start comparing yourself and feeling like you're not good enough. But when you incorporate some of these techniques like breath work, like understanding your true essence and who you are on the inside, developing that self-love, which translates into self-confidence, that's when it becomes so much easier to do anything and become successful at it, whether it's getting that crown or finding that self-love that's going to lead you to find your ideal partner or getting your dream career. I have a course pretty much for everybody, mostly women who are between the ages of 20 and 35. These are usually my clients. And they come to me for any one of those things, whether they want to have an incredible career, whether they want to find the love of their life through self-love, and to what when they want to win the crown or the title. So I definitely, you know, love talking about spirituality, and that's why I enjoyed this chat so much with you, Tiffany, because it seems like you resonate a lot with on the same level, and we kind of have that same mindset about it. So thank you so much for giving me that chance to express myself and to talk about what's important to me. Really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, Nathalie, it is an honor to have you. Nathalie, I know you're conscious about being sustainable living. I wonder what kind of practices you're doing in your home to contribute to have a sustainable lifestyle.
Sure. That is such an important subject right now that really needs to be talked about more and more. We started doing a compost in our house a couple of years ago. It means separating all of foodstuffs that does not include, of course, meat or fish or dairy, but all of this plant-based, and we eat a lot of vegetables and fruits in our house. So we compost a lot of the stuff, and the rest of the plastics or paper, whatever it is, we separate it as well to recycle it. Other than that, I think what else we do is just really try to conserve energy as much as possible. I'm always such a stickler for turning off lights and air conditioning when not in use. So I'm definitely walking around everywhere checking to make sure that we're not using unnecessary electricity. Ideally, of course, we would love to live in a house, and hopefully soon we'll get a chance to move into a new place that's entirely solar panels, solar power. And already in Phuket, we're seeing a lot of developers that are giving that choice to people, to home buyers who want to live a greener lifestyle. We also do regular beach cleanups. That's something that we do because we live right next to the beach. A lot of the times we'll just go on the walk, take a garbage bag and just collect plastic bottles and trash and whatever doesn't belong there And I work with some of the sustainable organizations here in Phuket as well who organize beach cleanups. So that's a lot of fun. And it feels like we're doing something good for the island, at least, you know, for our beaches.
But that's incredible. You're doing so much already. So amazing. And one thing I love about living here in Japan is...
I was going to say, any other tips that you can give me that I can incorporate? Maybe you do something that I haven't mentioned.
I don't think so, though, but because you're doing so much already. But I will share you a few things that we do. Here in Japan, the separation of all the waste are very important. And the garbage collectors are not going to collect it if you don't do it properly. So each household has to have a proper way of separating everything. And one thing that only frustrates me is the amount of plastic that people use in Japan is so crazy. Like you, I also do composting. So a lot of my waste that I have is normally almost gone and it's just like mostly plastic. So that frustrates me, having a lot of plastic still.
Well, I guess one of the things that we can do is also, for instance, we don't buy plastic straws anymore. So we have metal straws that we use at home. When I go grocery shopping, that's another thing. Of course, I take my cloth bags. So in Phuket, actually, they don't have plastic bags anymore, which is great. Mm. But I think that encouraging restaurants and business owners, for example, on the beach, sometimes I still see plastic straws and cutlery. And I'm like, you could actually switch and maybe encourage them to try different alternatives because there's so many options now. There's bamboo straws. There are those rice paper straws that dissolve. There's just many, many, many options these days. I think we can all do our part for sure, as much as we can.
Yes, absolutely agree. One thing that I do, because in Japan, when you go to restaurants, especially now during COVID, they give you plastic forks and spoons or even chopsticks. So I would always bring my own chopsticks every time. So I don't have to use whatever they're serving. So that also another way of, I think, small things that we can do to contribute.
Wonderful.
Thank
you. Little steps add up to big results, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely agree. Another podcast episode that we had two separate series, episode number 108 and 109, where we had Joe Krishnakumar. Joe is an amazing activist who I met via listening to other queer podcasts. And hearing their stories really fascinated me about the sex workers and the brothels. Very inspiring initiatives they started to have safe spaces for the LGBTQ+ community in India. So listen to more on this episode. Since we're talking about allyship, I wonder for you, what should they do to be a good ally?
Stop asking what people, allies should stop asking, what should I do to be a good ally? Because there's a lot of information out there. Just read, respect the opposite person. I mean, if you're talking about, different things. Like if you're talking about pronouns, if you slip up, most trans people, I feel like all trans people don't mind if you slip up once. As long as you just correct yourself and move on. Don't make it more about yourself and be like, oh no, I'm so sorry. I would never do it again. La, 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 la. And make a huge deal out of it and then end up doing it again. A person can say whether you're doing something purposely or not. Mm. If you are an ally, just keep being an ally. Don't expect trophies for it. And honestly, all of us are allies to another community. Mm. There is no this thing that there are all these victim people and then there are all these ally people. It's nothing like that. All of us are allies to each other for different things. And so we are all learning from each other. It is this large constellation of people, and some people group together to form communities. Some people don't group together to form communities. For some people, communities are not useful. For some people, communities are useful. For some people, community literally just means one other person. So for me, allyship, honestly, if I had to bring it down to what I really think about allyship, it's just like, I personally don't think there is a thing as community. There is a thing as what you do for the community. These are community actions. So I feel like me coming on a show with you, with another trans person, talking about our trans experiences is an action for the community. And sometimes you don't have the time or the space to do those actions for community. So there is no such, like, you know, metaphorical understanding that there is a random community that you need to keep being and trying to be a part of. And you don't have to be like, okay, if you find somebody like that, your Dungeons and Dragons community is a community, I guess. But at the same time, you make the effort to meet the same people every single week. That action is community. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
Yeah, like what you do is the community. Let's say like talking to a person who wants to come to the UK and like just giving them the information and being like, okay, this is how you come to the UK. For a trans person, these are the resources. That is a community. That is the action that you do for the community is community rather than a thing that exists somewhere in the air and that you have to constantly strive to be a part of. Because I feel like a lot of queer people, trans people keep feeling like they have to validate their stories and be something to be a part of this larger trans community. I don't know what a larger trans community is. We are so different as people because it's not something you can strive for and ever be a part of. Because for each person, community means something different. So there is no one idea or definition of community. So what are you trying to be a part of?
Wow. Beautifully explained and very sensitively explained. I love that. And I love the way that you said about the ally to other communities. I think not just being in the community that you belong, I mean, being in other communities, you also represent the community. And that's what I've been trying to do. Showing up in different communities, not just the LGBT community, but also other women community. It is important for us to represent in each community so then people will understand more about us as well, right? So I love that you brought up that topic. So thank you. Our final highlight for this week's best compilation of conversations from last year is episode number 112. What is gynosexuality? Understanding another gender identity spectrum. This podcast episode made me understand about how gender orientation can be really broad and there are more gender identity within the LGBTQIA+ spectrum. I really admire Jenny's authenticity and being so open in talking about her journey in finding and discovering her own identity. And also how society responds to her and how she navigated to her own struggles. Most of her stories really resonated with me and my own self-experiences. I was walking on the way back home and I literally just randomly bump into a person who is, I don't know his gender identity, but he's wearing a stockings and a wig. And I believe he's Japanese. I'm literally walking on his back and he's in the front. There's this another Japanese person walking in front of me. Just observing how like Japanese respond when they see something different. I think there's a respect of boundaries in Japan. If there's something different that they see, I mean, they don't really like say anything or they don't judge people. So I think that's respect that they have. I always believe that Japanese people respect, and I never been disrespected and being bullied in Japan for being who I am. It was just amazing to see that. And I've seen so many scenarios like that, but it's just amazing how you can see that here in Japan. I was going to ask you, in Japan, do you think you're more comfortable living here as a gynosexual or you're more comfortable living in America?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of hard to be certain about that just because there's sort of pros and cons to both countries in terms of that. I mean, America has far greater cultural diversity, especially in the bigger cities in America. I know I keep going back to clothing, but in America, it seems like the sorts of clothing that you can wear in public is less. In Japan, it tends to be a bit more conservative. When I'm in a bigger city in the United States, I can sort of wear whatever the heck I want and I don't care at all, which is really nice. Whereas in Japan, I tend to think about it a bit more before I commit to an outfit for the day. America also has a lot more LGBTQ support facilities and organizations, even in quite small locations. I mean, my hometown is all of like 80,000 people. It's smaller than the city I'm living in now. But we've got a big university, so they have their own LGBTQ organization. The city has its organization, and we've got the surprisingly well-developed LGBTQ youth organization and adult trans support group and all this stuff. In Hofu City, where I live here in Japan, I mean, that stuff just does not exist. We're lucky to get like one LGBTQ talk or conference or something in City Hall once a year. You know, that's kind of about it. But on the other hand, Japan has a much lower crime rate and is much safer, especially at night. If I want to, you know, I can like go to a nightclub or something, wear that kind of outfit. I can walk from one end of this city to the other and back at 2 o'clock in the morning and not be afraid at all for any reason. And I just can't do that in the United States. I mean, if I'm wearing something nice, I'm either walking around in daytime, or if it's at night, I'm with friends, you know, with a group, or like I'm staying in a very public place, you know, never be alone, you know, on a dark side street kind of thing. And so there are some ways that Japan is more free. In some ways, Japan's more restrictive. In some ways, America's more free. In some ways, America's more restrictive for a variety of reasons. So unfortunately, I can't give you an absolute, you know, yes or no to one or the other on that one. It's just different, I guess.
Absolutely agree. Like, I'm really glad you brought up the safety that we have here in Japan. That's also one big reason how I lived here for this long in Japan, because I thought my safety here, anywhere else in the world, even in my own country in the Philippines, I don't think I'm going to have the same safety that I have here in Japan. So I don't have to worry about that part, which is a big part for us, because we are still not accepted in many communities. So having that safe space and you're not thinking about your safety anymore, I think is such a big thing for us, right? So I'm really glad that you brought that up, and thank you for sharing your thoughts about it. That's all for now. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you get plenty of learnings from this episode. And again, don't forget to check out all the complete episodes and series of this conversations, as we will provide all the details on our podcast show notes. Sending you all my love, and may you all have a beautiful and amazing week ahead. And I'll talk to you again for our next Breakfast with Tiffany Show podcast next Tuesday. Bye for now. Love you all. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you reach up until this last minute of the show, I am extremely grateful for you for tuning in the whole entire episode. If you enjoyed our episode today, please share it to your friends. You can copy and paste the link wherever you are listening to right now. Text your friend, share on your Instagram stories or your Facebook page. Tag me on your social media when you post it. I'd love to hear from you. Share your thoughts on the interview that I had today. And if it's your first time here, once again, please do me a favor to subscribe on the podcast. Leave us a review. In every review, it makes me so happy. So I'm looking forward to your ratings and review on Apple Podcasts. You can impact someone's life right now by just sharing our episode today. I hope you enjoy this episode today as much as I do, and I hope you know how much you matter, how much I appreciate your time for listening, how much I love you and appreciate you. I am truly grateful for your kindness and your support. And as I always say, sprinkle kindness wherever you go. I love you, and stay safe and healthy.
Join us again next Tuesday for the Breakfast with Tiffany show with Tiffany Rossdale.